now, so you look into these views, which are life messages. I'm not good enough to be a life message. You probably might not find yourself saying it, except when you really get in a bad state, where you're pretty upset. But it could be a one of the life messages that's there, not good enough, need to be better. Yeah. Various life statements, obligation, got to do, feelings of need to, it's up to me to do things, or I can't do anything, I'm incapable of action, or incapable, or don't deserve. These may in fact never be things you say to yourself, but they can be lurking as kind of underlying messages that affect one's responses. So you have these biases that affect responses. So process of steadying your energy, and really looking into that, it becomes important to for insight, not just to be still, but to have something just pushing a button or ringing a bell somewhere, just to see how you jump, how the program starts. But then you have the calm or the frame of reference, which is the calmness, and you see this thing jump up within this frame of reference, and then by maintaining that but also widening to include the frame of reference, that jump is no longer given energy, so it just tends to evaporate. So, frame of reference, calming, steadying, stillness is a frame of reference. Rather like you have an experiment, and you have a screen, and then you put things in that and see the activities that occur within that, like subatomic particles, or you're dropping something into water and you see the ripples. Yeah. But you hold the frame and you witness what occurs within that, like that, but you don't lose contact with the frame. What tends to happen for us with our minds is when something happens, we go completely into the activity, we get embroiled in the activity, thought comes up, and then we engage with it, make more of it, or add our programs to it. I've got to do this, I shouldn't do that, it must be this, it must be that. Why am I thinking? Should stop thinking. How do I stop thinking? And all that, actually giving more and more energy to that particular process, that event. So, and then with the process of meditation, you're not averse to events. The thought comes up, but at the same time, instead of that contraction of going into that particular story, theme, event, emotion, memory, there's that. And then you keep the wide frame of reference. How do we do this? We do this, there are simple, they're simple. Just remembering to do them is pausing before, as you're about to do your thing, or maybe you are doing your thing, you are already engaged, and then wait a minute, check, pause, just come back to the frame of reference, which could very well be the embodied state. What will tend to happen as we get to get involved with our mental processes, we lose the body. You just become this thought process, this emotions, and you lose your body. Or you lose most of it. You might feel your face, or your eyes, or your mouth, or your hands, or heated, charged up bits, but you lose most of it. Disembodied, and there's this kind of stuff going on. So just coming to the whole body, pausing, and then, what's happening in my hands? Now with frames, like a picture frame, for example, the important feature of the frame is not what's in the picture, but what's peripheral. The frame is the periphery that supports the picture, isn't it? So when you go to a museum, you don't actually study the frames, you look at the portraits within the frames. If it wasn't for those frames, those canvases would skew. you know, I wouldn't be able to hold them up. But you don't really notice the frame. Now what we're trying to do is go to that frame which is peripheral, doesn't seem very important, doesn't seem to be the main pressing topic of the day, so what? And yet its purpose is to be exactly that. So what? Not very important. But here it is, it's a frame. So we're not particularly looking for really fancy, intricate frames with all kinds of fine tooling on them, special esoteric frames, it's just something solid. So using the simplicity of the body posture and getting to know that and work it and build it when there isn't very much going on. You know. You use those times just to build up that sense of frame is a frame, that's all it's supposed to be. Don't have to do a lot of painting on it, make a big thing out of it. Then it's just workable. Yeah. So then if it becomes something you've done that work on, then your mind will know, almost become entrained to refer to it. And a lot of this is just the process of doing it time and time again till your mind really gets it. Not as a thought, as an idea, but almost as a you say, a reaction, or a kind of a skillful reaction. Go to that frame, go to that body. No matter how convincing, happy, excited, terrible, ghastly the thought is, go to the frame. Not to repudiate the thought, but just to hold it in perspective. This is not a negation experience, it's holding it in perspective. And then holding that in perspective, see what happens to that thought process, to that story, you know, to that thing. See what happens when you don't go into it, but you don't squash it, you frame it. So pausing is part of that, and then going to the frame is part of it. The other piece that's a part of it, in order to find the correct response to some of these messages and stories that come through, is taking it down to one word. So you'll never find your thought processes or your messages or your obsessions or your joys being one word. They do not stay at one word. That is not enough. They like lots of them. Yeah. They like lots of them, lots of detail. And an evolving line, possibly. An evolving line with repeated themes in it. You know, he never did, and I always get, and how dare they, and it's just slowing down again, so throw another how dare they into it. And always, never, always good parts of it, and deserve, and right, and all those kinds of things. Generally good things to throw in when the story starts getting tedious or boring, you throw in one of those, it perks it up again. It's like, it's like putting curry powder in a dish which you've got to say, zip something, you know, there's a bit more spice in that in another few minutes. So it's one of those. So what we want to do is to just check those words. Possible. Even try to get it down to one word that says the whole thing. Yeah. So you kind of zoom back, not trying to stop your story, but zoom back, almost as if you're somebody else listening to it and say, "What's this? Could you get it down to you know? Well, let's try down five words, and then down to one word. The one word could be, angry. Could be." Sad, it could be tired out, could be abused, could be compelled, obliged, ought to is two words, but you can have that. Something of that nature. So you get down to the one term, let's take one term that covers it, and then you take that one term and use it like a mantra. How's that feel? So you want to translate this rather brisk and lively thought process into just one term, and then how the feeling of that? What is it? So what does that feel like? when you say that to yourself, like, you know, ought to. At the first start, you might think, God, it's so pathetic or absurd. So that's another thought. So you don't actually want a thought. You want something on the nature of an emotion to arise. Okay, so you're taking it from the concept, you know, just briskly running along, and just even listening to the rhythm of it. You know, wow, agitated. You can't find it, not agitated. Or it could be happy, excited, you know, eager. It's not about good and bad, it's just how do you stay present with things. You know, agitated, restless, don't know. Could be don't know. No centre, something like that. So just give yourself the time to feed it out, and the rhythm of it, the sound of it, the emotional tone of it, and you take that one thing and place it there, place it in the heart. And that's where the response will come. Now it may even be that useful, you go one term that as you bring it in, you kind of almost get a visual image of it, or something, not exactly a visual image, but a felt image, such as, you know, sinking, or you know, driven, you know, or swirling, or stuck, clogged, stuck, you know, stuck, meshed, glued down, you know, can't find a way out of this, glued, stuck. So that's even better. You know, you bring that one word in, and then how are you with that? How are you with that? What's it like to hear that or to feel that? And then widening to include your entire felt body, your embodied sense. And then where do you feel there's that state, which clogged state, agitated state, and then what's happening in your feet, for example? Well, they're okay. So you find the frame is the bit that's okay. You've got the periphery, which is not part of that process. So you stand in your cool place or your frame of reference with or bearing with or experiencing or cognizant of this other activated piece. And that's what you do. And then you just wait, listen, feel, see what happens. The response is something you don't do it, do you? You just set up the ground for something to happen. Don't even expect it, you know, to set it up and be interested in holding it. Because just holding it itself is quite helpful in itself. Even if you don't feel we can get a response, just to be able to step out and witness those thoughts and emotions, you know, that itself is remedial. Because at that time you're not putting more curry in the pot. But certainly if one can tune in more to not just the visual sense, the witnessing sense, which is, you know, often part of what we do in meditation, or we kind of encourage being the watcher, the witness, but this is more like being a sympathizer. It's just a slight tonal difference, allows a little more room for response than witnessing does. Witnessing is not, by itself, generally doesn't respond, it just witnesses. You get that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So just being the interested sympathizer. He's not trying to fix it, but just... And then that certainly creates a place for response to occur. When response occurs, what you're feeling in the topic itself may very well change. You know, first thing you said, it's really, really agitated, and then holding that, oh, tired. And tired. Oh, sad. That's it. It's sort of unpeeled, you know, agitated, and you get tired. Besides, agitation is really tiring. And you're tired, and you're feeling sad, because sad is part of the emotional sense of just when you're tired out. Sad, bad, and then resting, and then the shift occurs. So, you know, and you thought, oh well, and you've kind of, what's happened is your energy has changed, dropped from the agitated state, hit the bottom, you've bottomed out in a way, and you come through, and then you go, wow, what was I getting agitated about? And then you can review. Right, you've processed, and then you come back, and then you might very well review, well, what was I getting agitated about? Because now you're in a place where you've gone through the reactivity process, and what it does to you, so you've seen what it does to you, and you come through those layers of reaction, the agitation, which is that got to do, and then the fatigue, which is the result of doing all the time, and then maybe some of the message of compulsion, like you've got to keep doing this, and you come through that, and then that, oh, and you come out of the personality program into something more impersonal, and yet felt subjective. And that's where the response comes. It can't come from within your personality. I mean, you can do helpful things with your personality, like, oh, just stop doing that, do this, try to do that. You can be a reasonable personality in doing good things to, you know, training yourself, disciplining yourself. But there's a point in which personality just can't do it. Because it itself is a series of constructions. And it can be carrying those messages. It doesn't know how to get beyond its own messages. Yeah. So then you come almost like at the bottoming out is when you come past the edge of the personality. You know, personality is a little structure that sits within the heart. As you come through, it comes something wider, which is much more universal. There's a sense. Sometimes with that comes a sense of, well, this is the same for everyone, you know, or other people experience this too, and life is like this. You get much more global in your perspective, and then there's that sense of, well, you don't need to be that person anymore. You don't need to keep creating yourself in that particular pattern anymore. I don't know if I'm saying too much. Because it's called any bit of it one can explore. Throwing out some pieces to consider, overload. But there's a lot in there that we learn through this. Why meditation and this inner work is so potent, so valuable, and such a long life-term experience. Not that it's not endurance, it's life of curiosity and learning, yeah. And really transforming. So it isn't just a little bit of, you know, mental exercise one does, but ongoing, curious, really. And then coming into something which is beautifully universal, responsive, isn't just limited to the personality realm. And then the responses are often, wow, where did that come from? You know, because it didn't come from the personality structures. And that's what's so beautiful about it, is a relief to see that this dynamic responsiveness that isn't really created and me being this way or that way. It's just something comes and it helps you, it takes you. You feel very blessed to be a human being. And this possibility. So pausing on the action, and then spending time building up the frame of reference, body frame of reference, being able to go to that frame of reference, know what it feels like, you really get to it, and then the patience of bearing with, holding your peace, your whatever it is, even if it's not very much, within that frame of reference. And then resonating with it. What actually is the bit? What does this all boil down to? Even if you don't get it right. Just play with that. look more at the energy. Is it brisk energy, slow energy? Is it pressed? Is it rushing forward? Is it reluctant? What kind of energy is there? Feels like this. And you don't have to get it right, because you can keep resonating with it till it becomes more accurate. What's the emotion? What's the voice? What's the energy? And you get it down to something portable, and then you place that in your heart. How do you feel being with that? And that's quite... again, avoid judgment and avoid analysis, and try to get the thinking simple, more like pictorial thinking. Like, feels sticky, it feels heavy, feels grinding, feels bouncy. And you may even get a sense with that as like you almost see yourself in that being. You get this kind of felt impression of yourself, because it is a part of your, of who you've become. Here's me being bouncy again. Here's me, you know, doing my Eeyore impressions again. It's never going to work for me. You can't look at that. 3 years. It's part of that's part of it. You know, you're seeing yourself, but it's actually a kind of a loving amusement to see this being twittering away. So there she is. There he is. And, okay, and then you come something. A response can come up from that. In terms of what happens to us, what we deal with, sometimes, I'm pretty okay sitting here, nothing really cooking up, just sitting here. So what? A few little whimsical thoughts drifting through, nothing, no big storms, fine, I'm okay. And then it's kind of snatches of Mozart and occasional... chicken lasagna comes drifting through. Nothing special happening. Where's the big breakthrough? Where's the traumas? Where's the... We're not suffering here. So what's that like? How is that? Skating. Just sort of skating along, missing something. Missing something. That can be the feeling. Just sort of drifting, skating, drifting, whimsical, so what? Okay, well, what's that? So some of these pieces are not very dramatic, they have nothing much to say, but still you just hold that and be with that. So it doesn't really matter the topics, but just using that frame of reference, and sooner or later things change. Now, there are also particular habits or reactions that prevent insight, which we know, which we probably all experience when we meditate, and one of them is zoning out. You just when you go on retreat, generally it's about 80% of it just So there's that one. When did the last hour go? So that one prevents things, because you don't actually, you know, you just kind of go off topic, off all topics, and zone out. So for that, you really want to, well, actually, if, you know, even if you feel that happening, it's probably, you can recognise it's one of the things almost certainly going to happen. Part of what happens. So this is where we get a sense of really put some effort into simple frame, you know, knees, feet, backside, hands, shoulders, holding that, you know, keeping your eyes open, counting breath, something that just firms it up, you know, firming up. Trying to stay on course, walking up and down, standing, and recognizing that, you know, one of the big messages in meditation. Meditation doesn't work just by sitting there. You know. You can't say I did an hour sitting and that was meditation. It could be like 59 minutes of zoning out. It doesn't count. You can't put it on your bonus point. So this means we can say, well, actually, it's better to walk around or stand or open or even think something, you know, than do that. You know, so you've got that recognition of meditation is only works if it's the witnessing, the direct engagement, the witnessing, the feeling, the relating to. Yeah. So it's essentially a relational experience, non-attachment, but yet it's also, you know, something you're working, you're with. If you're not with anything, it doesn't count as meditation. So then you get a feeling your practice then becomes a little more pliable and adjustable in accordance with what is suitable. The zoning out, that's one thing. Another one is the distraction. Bing, pick up a topic and run with it. And some of these distractions are almost like a blinking of the eye. You see something starts to be seen, and you half see something in the mind. Before you know it, the mind has jumped off somewhere else. You didn't want to see that. The distraction, the jumping, skipping. So then you can't. Well, you can't. All you can do is you notice you've jumped. Where did that come from? And you slow it down, come back to the frame of reference, feel the results, spot something is occurring, so you come back again to the main theme. There is a quality of not feeling anything. Like just kind of numbed out, which is a bit like zoning out. There's nothing, just kind of numbed out sense, experience. For that, you want to get specific, like what's happening in my hands. You know, how do I know the difference between my left hand and my right hand? So you've got to ask questions. And you want to get to feeling, really. Numbing out means there's no feeling. Well, feeling is negated. Yeah, you've got to say, well, actually, how do you know you've got four fingers and a thumb? Can you discern four distinctly different feeling zones? Can you feel two hands? And what difference is the left hand and the right hand? Then just swing between left hand, right hand, left hand, it feels like that. So you want to really track feeling. And if you're in that numb state, something where the feeling tone is can be pretty obvious. Your hands are very sensitive. So it goes to the hands. You could even gently move your hands. Get it going. And if it gets a bit better, well, how do I know just between my forefinger and my middle finger and my ring finger and my little finger? If that's going, then the top joint, the second joint, third joint. So you deliberately do that. You're just looking at getting the physical feeling. So this helps to clean the scale, the numbing sludge off the mental acuity. Now, so many of these seemingly kind of small problems, some of them are just mental habits. But they all rest upon two fundamental currents that we all have, which rarely surface, like underground streams, and yet these surface activities are representations of these underground streams. One of them is the stream of becoming, which is that urge to have, to hold, to be, to form, to get going, to be somebody. You know. So that comes up with obligation. I ought to be somebody. I ought to be something. Yeah. I need to be something. I'm not something enough. I'm not as good as I should be. That need to be. It's not necessarily comes up as pride, but almost sometimes as a fear of not being enough. I need to be more. Better, more, louder, more apparent, more fulfilled, whatever need to be, bhava. The other is the need to negate, shouldn't be, don't want to exist, like to fade out. Yeah. And so the zoning out and the numbing out are really parts of the vibhava, the need to not be. Like, let me disappear. I don't want to be conscious. I don't want to be aware. I don't want to be with something. These are not personal decisions at all. This is pre-personality. These are pre-personal currents. That our personality just kind of creates its own personal imprint of that. You know, my way of not being here is doing this thing. My way of becoming something is to get embroiled in this particular topic, you know. Beekeeping, or you've got your thing. When you're in your thing, you're charged. They also give rise to two very strong patterns that we can recognise. One is the momentum. You get this driven sense, and you're just rolling on, rolling on, rolling on, and it's difficult to stop momentum. You know, you go from this to that, to this to that, to this to that, and it's all that. The currents of becoming are carrying one on, and your momentum. So we very much identify with activities and doing things. How did I manage? What did I do yesterday? I got up, sort of, you know, tidied the place up, parked phone calls, made some wheat, tea, and chat, read the papers. What did I do? That is 16 hours past five. just momentum. It was like, you get in a day, you just, I didn't do anything actually. You know, I didn't consciously feel this is really what I want to do. It was all just momentum. And it gets difficult to cut. Because, however it is, there's a sense in which it becomes a familiar form. We feel we're now on our treadmill. It's my treadmill. Or whatever it is, my momentum, and to break it. The other one is inertia, which is, well, you know, I used to meditate, and I probably will, yeah, tomorrow I'm really going to make an effort. Tomorrow, yeah, I'll get up there, like half an hour, yeah, I'll be there. And then half an hour, dong, wait. Get out a cup of tea first of all. I will phone somebody up, get some newspapers, something to eat. Well, we better get through the shopping. You know, didn't quite happen, the inertia. Yeah. Getting it up. Because these currents, whatever they are, have the attraction of a current is it does it for you. You just flow along in it, a certain passivity to it. And this is a very pernicious and persistent, because basically our social movement is all bhava-vibhava, by and large. You know, it's what societies and businesses and occupations work on. Just get somebody trained into that particular thing, and then don't. You set it up, and they will do it. They will run that course every day for the next 40 years. And they've got their rabbit run, and you do your thing, and you punch your car, and you get on this train, and you do that. And there's a recognition that human beings, social creatures, flock animals, once we get trained, we would do it. Because it's easier to follow a habit. It's always easier to follow a habit than to break out of it. To break out of momentum, which is always like, oh no, I can't stop now. Tomorrow I'll stop. You've got to break out of inertia. Yeah, well, tomorrow I'll start. I should do that. I will do that. Well, maybe another day. So you've got to break out of those currents, momentum, inertia. This is what bhava-vibhava happens. So it may not seem like reactivity, because you don't seem to be reacting, but you're in a current which is a kind of subliminal reactivity, in that you're just not properly acting. You know, there's a lot of movements going on, but you're not fully, genuinely, thoroughly with it. You're just going through it. You're puppeting. Yeah? This happens to all of us, you know, because it's easier that way. It's streamlined that way. And mostly times, functions, jobs, and so forth, all prioritize to be that is the road to success, the road to being effective. Get into momentum. And the result of it is a loss of authority, which is another part of it, isn't it? We find somehow that we've lost our real say, our real yes to what we're doing, or our sensibility to say clearly no. Yeah. We've lost that authority. So, the reactivity gets embedded as a set of this programming of momentum and inertia. Bhava, the momentum to keep becoming something, inertia, the unwillingness to enter something, can't do, not right now, don't feel quite like it, what's happening, energy just won't rise up, the other energy won't step down. So when you contemplate that, you look at that, and you see how do you come out of that. So these particular places, once when we do our pause, and you can feel this momentum thing going, this is where you come into that and you start to check, do a more thorough process when you have time tomorrow. Maybe I feel like it. How's that feeling? And what's happening in your face, your skin, your blood tone, is it heating up? Just curious. Try to transfer it into the body sense, grounding, rather like you're a lightning conductor going lightning rod into the ground. Letting that crackle of momentum move through. Then you begin to see and thoroughly know, wow, this seemingly innocuous routine I'm going through every day, actually when I put it in a frame of reference, this is a very potent charge that is driving me like a drug. You've been injected with it. Then you can start to, once you've got it to that level, you can start to discharge, asking questions: who is this? Where's it going? How is it in my body? Can it be discharged? Momentum. When you pause around and you recognise this, oh, I can't be bothered. Why bother? the feeling to that, the loss of energy, and then just feeling down into again to the feet, the hands. Just stand there, just can you be with that? And that's the turning point. Yeah, you can be with that, and then gradually if you stay even with that, it will start, energy will start to rise and come up again. So of course with inertia, once you get into inertia, you think, I've got to do all this and all that and all that and all that. But no, you don't, you just have to stand still for 1 minute and feel it more thoroughly, or half a minute, feel it more thoroughly, and then that will have its effect. So it says tipping point, momentum always is, it's impossible to stop. And the tipping point of inertia, it's impossible to start. And so you come to those tipping points of impossible to stop, just feel, you know, the impossibility of stopping, how that expresses itself in your bodily sense. For 10 seconds, 20 seconds, 30 seconds. So if you can't, you've got to realize, you can't do 10 seconds in your life, well, actually this is not going to work. But so if you break it down to something like, not an hour, but 10 seconds, just as a checkpoint, and you do that repeatedly, that's overall going to be a powerful momentum breaker as doing your 1 hour at the end of the week. Probably more effective, more useful. Because in that hour of the week, you're probably 58 minutes zoning out anyway. So just, this is like little pieces to practice. And when you get to a tipping point, and instead of going into the momentum or inertia, you feel another dimension opening up. Then you find actually I've got 30 seconds to do this. And then maybe I've got 5 minutes, because it is furthering. And you start to enjoy it and feel the results of it. And so that's from the pause, and from the frame of reference, which seemed to be not very potent. Very potent results can occur, because it is furthering to find that ground. Okay. So I'll do my pause now. And let's do a little bit of standing.